All right, we are back. We're leaving behind Lieberman and Montgomery and strategic management in flavor of this much more sociological account of market emergence, category emergence, and basically, I would say, the sociology of innovation, right? Navis and Glynn are going to give us a study of the satellite radio industry, and they're going to use that to alert us to the role played by categories and legitimacy, which is basically a concern that comes out of what's called institutional theory. That account is going to add some further depth to our understanding of what actually constitutes uncertainty around innovation. It's going to be a new source of market uncertainty, and it's going to show us something about the challenges of strategic positioning that firms might have to contend with when they operate in new markets. Basically, we already know, and we should all kind of take it for granted, that there is uncertainty associated with developing innovations, right? That's the nature of exploration. We also know that there are challenges about entering a market with those innovations, right? Whether you're the first or second mover can really matter in dramatic ways, and the value of the market that you're addressing can really be highly uncertain. But there is more to this, right? So imagine that your innovation is essentially in an entirely new category, that it's unlike anything already offered in the market. You can't say that it's a better car, or it's a, or it's like Google for travel, right? It's just a brand new way to make cement, right? Think about when people started talking about the blockchain or 3D printing, right? Those were categories that had no real meaning to anyone outside of really technical communities, right? What do you do when that's what you're trying to market? When there is no category that you're entering, but that your product essentially is contributing to creating the category. When there's no established industry that you can kind of throw into an era of ferment, but when the industry has to be created. Essentially, Navis and Glynn are going to provide an account of that situation. And they're going to argue that when you enter a new market category, your strategic options are really quite limited. I mean, because the category that you're trying to build doesn't exist, you have to cooperate with your rivals in building that category together. And that forces you to affiliate with the joint identity, the category's identity, rather than build out your own corporate identity as a unique from your competitors, right? You need to cooperate. You need to cooperate because both your company and your rivals need the category to be legitimate in order for your company to be legitimate in its own right. Without legitimacy, the argument goes, you'll be unable to attract the kind of resources that you need to operate your business, right? You will need financing, workers, technology partners, and not trivially, customers that can recognize the value that you're trying to offer them. And all of that needs these external audiences to be considering your category, the thing you're doing, as a legitimate and real thing. It may be worth just underscoring what a market category is, right? Basically, you should think of this as kind of a social structure where exchange happens between producers and consumers, that you can label and call something, and that label has to be meaningful to the actors, right? Both to the producers and the consumers, and the audiences who kind of use that label. So craft beer, for instance, is a term that we can ascribe some meaning to. We can classify individual beers as belonging to that category or not, irrespective of whether we consume those beers or not, right? The same goes for smartphones. We know what a smartphone is and what is not a smartphone. And you might even go so far as to say that there are that the category is not a smartphone but an iPhone. But that's sort of a different discussion. Right? When a new category emerges, it tends, at least in this account, to be inherently unstable. There's nothing really solid about the meanings that people ascribe to what's going on. Right, the opportunities for using a technology haven't really been discovered yet, or they haven't spread very widely, so people don't really know what a technology is meant to be doing. Right, we tend to be really early in the technology's life cycle here, and so the technology is not only poorly understood by the innovators, but even more poorly understood by the potential users who might be struggling to make sense of it, right? What is it exactly that you want me to do with this satellite radio technology? You can kind of imagine them thinking. And as a related example, well, what exactly is it that this blockchain thing is going to do? Or what is it that you want me to 3D print? Right. Because it's so unstable, it's going to be hard to legitimate, and that makes it hard to operate in the category. Basically, the empirical analysis that Navis and Glynn present explore four hypotheses about firms in a how firms in a particular industry will act before and after the category becomes legitimate, and how audiences will be acting. Basically, before a category becomes legitimate, entrepreneurs, they argue, are going to claim collective identities as members of the category. They're going to claim collective identities, right? After the category has sort of firmly emerged, they will claim more distinctive organizational identities. Before legitimization and before category emergence, they will use language that normalizes and justifies the category as a whole. After, they will use language that emphasizes their unique position in the category. Before category emergence, entrepreneurs will affiliate themselves strongly with organizations that make them seem real and appropriate, whereas afterwards, they will affiliate with differentiating partners. Audiences are going to change their perceptions of the industry as well, or the category. Before legitimacy, they will focus on the category as a whole, right? And after, they will focus on the individual firms in the category. The story of how this kind of plays out in the radio satellite industry shows you the many sources of uncertainty that need to be navigated. Not so much for the individual innovations to function, but for the category as a whole to legitimately emerge. What's interesting is that in the early years of the industry, when radio satellites are getting launched and when partnerships with hardware producers and customers, in this case, it's automobile producers first, both of the key firms, they're called XM and Sirius, are not talking about their individual successes. You would kind of expect that often, right? These entrepreneurs are trying to claim their stake and maybe build up this sense of first mover advantages. Instead, they're constantly referring to the category's success, even when that's the success of their competitors. All the things that seem to be working out for satellite radio as a technology and a category is what's important, and it's not so much what seems to be working out for them. Basically, this is how the authors put it and summarize the dynamics pre-legitimation. I'm going to quote now. In the early period of market category emergence, the firms promoted a collective identity, muting their individual distinctiveness. Several organizational partnerships in technology, manufacturing, and markets were not exclusive to one firm, but were shared in common by both, e.g. Volkswagen, BBC, and Clarion. Thus, the firms focused on jointly creating the shared economic and meaning structures that would define the new category. Overall, the firms and audiences in this early period of emergence tended to frame the organizations as undifferentiated actors within a new market category that was becoming increasingly comprehensible, real, and appealing to interested audiences. But with the onset of commercialization, the organizations soon changed their orientation. The change that begins to happen when the category becomes emergent becomes legitimate and commercialization is picking up speed, is, as the authors put it, the following. I'm going to quote again, right? So the firms amplified their differences rather than muting them as they had done in the earlier period, right? They begin making claims to their individual uniqueness, and I'm going to quote again, such claims shifted the perception of the new market category from a set of undifferentiated firms to individuated firms that competed within it, each indexing their claimed gradient of membership, i.e. it's a particular and unique way that they belong to the category and bring something to it that others aren't bringing. This is almost like how when kids grow up, they all want to be the same, they all want to belong, and then they become teenagers, and then they all want to be deeply unique, right? As the shift happens, the companies also begin to focus less on the future. The emerging technology that they're building to some extent together and the world that it will usher in is something that they kind of leave aside, and they move on to the more immediate present where they are actively competing. That competition is obvious both to the companies themselves and to the audiences observing the category. As you can kind of see that the kind of Schumpeterian condition, this focusing both on the present and the future, kind of has a shift, right? So as the category is emerging, organizations are all about the future and all about this world that they're going to be, that their category is going to contribute to building. And then over time, their focus as the category matures becomes more and more the competition that they are in right now. The competition is obvious both to the companies themselves and to the audiences that observe the category. Right? When the market starts to grow dramatically, that sense of competition only picks up and the speed of it becomes more aggressive. That makes sense, right? Suddenly there is more market at stake. Now we're not all just investing to build something, we're also trying to reap the rewards of that. It's only when the category exists so firmly as to make it meaningful to talk about an actual industry that competition begins to take on the form that we usually expect, with the companies vying to better each other. I think this account, this view of initial collaboration and category emergence, paints a very different picture of what we get from Lieberman and Montgomery. Where uncertainty for Lieberman and Montgomery was something that the first mover bears and bears alone with the intent of minimizing subsequent competition, for Navis and Glynn, uncertainty is something that the category shares, right? It's something that all the producers in it share. It's shared because without collaboration, legitimacy simply cannot be built, right? A firm cannot go it alone. Each firm depends, in their account, on the existence of the category as a whole in order to succeed. And before the category is there, it really makes no sense to try to differentiate yourself. You're kind of creating, you're competing for a larger slice of a pie that doesn't exist. There is then, in this kind of more sociological account, no use in really being the first mover if there's no second mover, because without that second mover, there's no industry, right? So in this sense, moving too hard on securing first mover advantages are going to exclude second movers, and that will mean that the slice of pie that you get is going to be much smaller, right? This is kind of the flip side of the pursuit of quasi-monopoly. That's kind of the essence of trying to secure competitive advantage. If you play the first mover game that Lieberman and Montgomery are describing, and you play it too hard, you are potentially precluding yourself from having a market to benefit from that first mover advantage in. This dynamic, I think, is important to more than legitimacy, which is what Navis and Glynn focus on. If you adopt something that more resembles the kind of strategic management perspective that Lieberman and Montgomery are taking in, you could say that having more actors in a product category is important in at least three other dimensions. For one, it can kind of contribute to enabling an ecosystem to be built up around your product. An ecosystem is important because it can provide users of your product with complementary goods and services that increase the value of your product. Second, it can de-risk certain parts of the supply chain. A supplier may be more willing to commit to supplying an emergent industry if the success of that industry does not depend on the fortunes of one company alone, right? Lots of things could go wrong for one company, but for a whole category, it might take more for it to actually not succeed. Third, the existence of other actors in an industry can allow firms to jointly share some of the innovation work. They can engage in what's sometimes called collective invention. They'll be competing, of course, but it's quite well established that we often see some quite extensive occurrences of what's also called informal know-how trading, where innovation workers from firms that are competing trade information that allow them to collectively solve problems much faster, right? That can potentially contribute to informally dividing development costs between actors, and that can make the success of innovation projects more likely and thus contribute to the success of the entire industry. that again can kind of be an argument against excluding competition too firmly. As regard kind of the general empirical validity of this argument, I'm a little bit skeptical. I already kind of mentioned the iPhone, and without knowing that in too great detail, I feel it's sort of a good counterexample to satellite radios. Apple, as I understand it at least, didn't do much in the way of shared identity building with Samsung, but quite happily tried to own that market category that the iPhone occupied. Tesla, similarly, doesn't seem, at least to my non-expert observation, to be doing a lot to try to lift up other electric car producers with a shared identity. They try to define that category and seem, at least right now, to be relatively successful at it. A much more low-tech example that we kind of touched on already is the struggle between Pepsi and Coca-Cola. To casual observation, they don't seem like they tried to build that category together, right? Coca-Cola was much more focused on excluding Pepsi than on having them in the category to lift up and increase the size and legitimacy of the soda market. And so it kind of makes me wonder how much of Navis and Glynn's argument is generally applicable and which part is contextual. Or maybe slightly better put, what is it that defines it raises a question, right? When is it that entrants to an emerging category are going to try to go it alone, and when is it that they jointly seek to legitimate a category? This should kind of make you think about the term of contextual findings, something that we talk a lot about in research methods, which is basically a question of how much of your finding is driven by the particular research context that you looked at, and how much of it is generalizable. With that, I want to close this particular session, and we're going to move on to a more chapter from the book Crossing the Chasm. That is all for this paper.